So we're holding on Tzadik Zayin, Amr Aleph, fourth line. Now the Gemara starts off, Shitzi Atzbi Simen. This is a simen for the names of the Amoraim and the statements that we're going to be making. Rav Shmuel by Rav Yitzchak is the Shin and the Yud, or the Shin is for Shmuel, the Yud is for Yeshanos. And later on we have Rav Yitzchak, and we have Tzvasim later down on the Amud. It's actually a little bit uncertain exactly what this simon stands for. Basically, like the simonim go, it stands for some keywords or some names that are going to feature in the discussion. I've often mentioned things from a sefer called Bamnatseach L'David by Rav David Powder, one of the big Sfardish Rabbanim of a couple hundred years ago, where he tries to find in each one of them some deeper meaning behind it. He explains that the word shitzi means in Aramaic thorns, and atzvi is Moloshin atzabim, means idols. So he explains that it's talking about at the bottom of the Amud, we're going to talk about a danger from goyim versus from listim, from robbers, where those robbers can be Jews. So therefore, the thorns represents the Jews who are not doing the right thing. They're robbers, as opposed to the atzvi represents the goyim. He says that's the deeper meaning behind this simon. Anyway, it's appropriate, actually. It's Motzei Shabbos, Parshas Chayesara, when you have the famous thing about thorns, Rivka being like the rose among thorns that was plucked out of there. So maybe there's some connection with that also. Anyway, so Gemara says, okay, we left off like this. We're discussing the question of, in the Mishnah we had Rabbi Yehuda saying that,
Alexander.
Yes. Yeah.
I don't hear you very well. It sounds very muffled and muted.
I'm not sure why that should be. I have my volume on maximum. I don't know. I'm not sure what to tell you. I'll try to speak a little louder, I guess. Anyway, we said in the Mishnah that you can, if you find tefillin out in the field, then you can wear them and bring them in on Shabbos. But we said in the Mishnah that only applies if they're old, not if they're new. We brought a braisa where Rabbi Yehuda is saying that. Rabbi Yehuda distinguishes between new tefillin and old tefillin. Now, why should there be a difference? So we started discussing that maybe that is because that would be, according to that opinion, the problem is these might not actually be tefillin at all. These might actually be kameis, which are made in the shape of tefillin, and therefore, so if they're new, then the point is Tosfos explains at the bottom of the previous Amud that neither of them right now have knots in them, but old ones you can recognize, you can see from the shape of the ritzuris that there once were knots on them, the dalad knot and the yud knot, as we're going to discuss soon. So therefore you know that they're tefillin, as opposed to new ones, you can't recognize that yet, so they might actually be kameis. So now the Gemara continues, and so Rabbah had said that actually that's the machlokes tanoim itself, Rav Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, would we say that a person might go to the trouble of making a kameya looking like tefillin, in which case these might actually be kameis, and therefore you don't have a heter to wear them and bring them in on Shabbos, or would we say that nobody's going to bother doing that, and therefore if you find something shaped like tefillin, then most likely it is tefillin. So now the Gemara continues, v'hashti v'toni avur d'shmur bar Rav Yitzchak. Now that we have a braisa that the father of Rav Shmuel bar Rav Yitzchak taught, now Rav Shmuel bar Rav Yitzchak's father obviously is going to be Rav Yitzchak. I guess the Gemara calls him Avur d'Shmuel bar Rav Yitzchak because the son was better known than the father. So if we just said Rav Yitzchak, we wouldn't know who it's talking about. When we say Rav Shmuel bar Rav Yitzchak's father, then it's more clear which Rav Yitzchak we're talking about. Anyway, he taught a braisa, Eluhen Yeshanis, the definition of old tefillin for this purpose, is kol sheyesh behem ritzuris umkosharis, is old ones are, there are ritzuris in them, and the ritzuris are actually tied with the proper knots of tefillin, the dalad knot and the yud knot, whereas chadoshes means yesh behem ritzuris v'loy mkosharis, new tefillin, the definition would be that there are ritzuris in them, but they're not tied. So now we understand from this braisa that it has nothing to do with like a kameya or not. Now we understand, dekula amalai torach inish. Now we can say, evidently, everybody agrees that nobody's going to bother making a kameya looking like tefillin. The question is, the problem is that if they don't have the knots in them, then how are you supposed to wear them on Shabbos? Because you can't tie knots on Shabbos. This that we're saying, that the Chachamim are giving us ways in order to be able to carry in these tefillin, ultimately you can't do it in a way that's going to be mechal Shabbos d'oraisa. You can only do where, for example, like this, wearing it is not the normal thing to do on Shabbos, but we're allowing it for this purpose. But not when you're doing a malacha d'oraisa, like tying. So that would be the problem. Nothing to do with kameis versus tefillin, but having to do with that you can't tie them. The Ritva adds, in other words, that the svara would be, that the svara would be, given that during week, that on weekdays, the only way you wear tefillin is with the knots on them, then therefore, in other words, on Shabbos, we can't allow you to wear it without the knots. We can't allow you, let's say, to just wrap it tightly around your head, because that would be different than you do on weekdays. So it would amount to carrying them rather than wearing. So the question is, why don't we find, we can't make an actual knot in them, why don't we make a bow tie in them, which is not considered a real knot? So the Chista says, since we don't have that as an option, then evidently that means that wouldn't, that sort of thing wouldn't work with tefillin. You need an actual kesher shokayama. You need an actual permanent knot, not just a bow tie. So therefore, nothing doing. A bow tie wouldn't work anyway. We're back to the point, in other words, that if you're wearing them not in the normal way that you would wear them on weekdays, that would be carrying them on Shabbos. The Gemara is going to explain in a second that actually the Yehuda and the Chachamim disagree in general anyway about bow ties, whether you're allowed to make them on Shabbos. Rav Yehuda holds not, the Chachamim hold yeah. So Tosfos says either Rav Chista would prefer to have the Mishnah go. Now we were talking about Rav Yehuda. It's the same Rav Yehuda who's distinguishing between the new and the old ones. Nevertheless, Rav Chista would prefer to make that part of the Mishnah about the distinction between new and old work not only according to the Yehuda, but even according to the Chachamim. Or Tosfos says the other possibility is that Rav Yehuda, Rav Chista takes the view that even Rav Yehuda, who doesn't allow bow ties, he would allow them where you're only doing, it's a bow tie, it's not a real knot, but it's not even something that you're planning to keep permanently. You're just doing it for the moment, and then you're going to take it out after Shabbos and make a real knot like Tzvillin should have. So therefore, Rav Chista figured that the fact nevertheless that we're not allowing that shows that that doesn't help as far as Tzvillin. You can't wear Tzvillin with a bow tie in them. Abaya Omar, Abaya says no, Rav Yehuda la taimei. Rav Yehuda is going according to his shita, the Amran Nivak Shita Malyasidi. He says that a bow tie is a real knot. Meaning, in other words, that, so we're back to that, according to Rav Yehuda, you can't make a bow tie in it because that would be the equivalent of making a real knot. And therefore, so the mayor is allowing it because he disagrees and says a bow tie is not a knot. Or Tosfos says, okay, even a mayor might say that a strong bow knot is because a strong bow tie is considered a knot, but not a weak one, which you might do over here. So Rav Yehuda, okay, would hold that a bow tie is possible. That is why Rav Yehuda says new ones, meaning as we just established from Rav Yitzchok's Breisa, from Avur de Shmuel by Rav Yitzchok's Breisa, that if they don't have knots in them, then you can't wear them on Shabbos. That's why, because Rabbi Yehuda says you can't make a bow tie, because Rabbi Yehuda holds that a bow tie you're not allowed to make on Shabbos either.
At this point, this Kamei business is off.
So it seems that we're saying the Kamei business is off. However, now that you mention it, it is an interesting point. Now you have Rishonim who learn that means, yeah, we're done with the idea of Kamei. We're strictly dealing with the question, do they have the knots in them or not? Can you make a knot? Can you make a bow tie or whatever? However, the Rif and the Rosh and the Rambam all learn that we still accept the point about that they might be Kameis, meaning that we still accept the Rav's point. So how do they understand the Gemara over here? So one way is to understand that we are mentioning the matter of knots, but still, that's not the primary thing. The primary thing is if they don't have the knots in them, they might after all be Kameis. If it weren't for that, maybe the Chachamim, if there wasn't a concern about it being a Kameya, maybe the Chachamim would allow you, given the halacha is not like a Yehuda, a bow tie is not a real knot, maybe they would allow you to make a temporary bow tie and take them in that way. But
if you find it has a knot, you don't have to worry about
it. So if you find that it has the knot, then we're saying that once it has the dalad knot and the yud knot, there's no reason to be concerned that it's kameya. Because to that extent, they might make a kameya in the shape of tefillin. They're not going to put the dalad knot and the yud knot on it like we have on tefillin. Yeah.
A Kameya doesn't have Kedusha,
right, at least. Well, even if it has some Kedusha, because maybe it has Pesukim in it, it doesn't have the degree of Kedusha that the Chachamim are going to allow you to do something which is, at least on a Derabanan level, Chilul Shabbos, in order to bring it in. What they would require in that case, at most what you would have to do is wait there till after Shabbos, like when I talk about the bottom of the Yomboot, and then bring them all in after Shabbos, but not to actually wear them.
Even if
it's Mukta. Is it Mukta? No, yeah, I mean, the Kameyas aren't necessarily Mukta, but...
If they
were used three times and none
of course, if people hold it to that, that Shabbos you don't wear tefillin and it's only a tachshit you got to wear. So
that's the point.
The Melech, you should be allowed to put on.
Nevertheless, though, we're still saying that it's not the usual way because you still, even if you say Shabbos loves my tefillin, that it's not normal to wear tefillin on Shabbos at all. So therefore, that's what we're saying. So the Chachamim are allowing us to bend that rule in order to save the tefillin from bizoyin, but not when they're not definitely tefillin. Yeah. By the way, Tosfos mentions an interesting point over here that there are Rishonim, he brings from Rabbeinu Eliyahu, who says that the knot of the tefillin has to actually be remade every day in order to be Mekayim. But based on this, it seems not enough. The Gemara is saying over here that it needs to be a Kesher Shel Kayama, that it needs to be a permanent knot, which is how we do it. We tie them once, so the sofer ties them for us, and generally we never retie them again. We never untie them and retie them. What we do have is the knot that we talked about the other day, the knot that the Alter Rebbe invented that has a loop in it, which we make larger and smaller. That way, at least in a certain sense, we're Mekayim Mokshavtum Lo'isay Yodecha by closing up that loop. Yeah. Although with that said, it's not so simple, because actually it's broad. I think there were some of the Rebbeim, actually. There were some of the Rebbeim who did not make up like this. When we take off our tefillin, we're in the habit of loosening, of opening up that loop a little bit. But some of the Rebbeim did not do that, actually. They would just, they held that you're Mekayim the mitzvah just by tightening the tefillin onto your arm without actually closing that loop, without actually making that loop tighter every day. And therefore, they just left it tight all the time.
So it has to be tight and it has to be the right spot. Where
it has to be in the right spot. That's also true, right?
Not easier.
Yeah, right. Okay. Fine. So the Gemara says, Taima Daniva Kshira Maliasidi. Okay, so what are you telling me? According to Rav Yehuda, according to Abaya's understanding of what's going on over here, Rav Yehuda is saying that if you find these tefillin without knots, then you can't do anything with them on Shabbos because you can't make bow ties. So the implication seems to be, why not? Because the Aniva Kshira Mali Sihi, because according to Rabbi Yehuda, a bow tie is a real knot, which you're not allowed to make on Shabbos. Holav Hochi Oniv Lahu. Does that imply, though, that if it weren't for that problem, if Rabbi Yehuda were to hold like a Chachamim, that you're allowed to make bow ties on Shabbos, you'd be allowed to make a bow tie in these, and then it would be considered you have a kosher and not for tefillin? What do you mean? Well, Amar of Yehuda Breder of Shmo Vashilas Mishmei Derab, Kesher Shol Tefillin, Alach Lomesh Misinayhu, the knot of the tefillin, the type of knot that we make on the Shol Yad and the Shol Rosh, that it has to be like a Dalid, and also, Rashi adds, also the fact that you have that a Shin on the outside of the Shol Rosh, and that you have the Yud by the Shol Yad, all of that is Alach Lomesh Misinay. And Rav Nachman says that when you make those knots, you have to make sure that the nice side of it is to the outside. So Rashi explains we're talking about the shin. In other words, when we say shin shel tefillin alach lamesh misinai, you think about it, the shorosh is made out of four compartments. You could understand it to mean that the shin should be on the side of one of those compartments where it touches the next one. No, it has to be labar, it has to be out on the outside of the respective compartments in order that's visible from the outside. Tosfos says actually we're referring to the knots. That when you make the dalad knot, you have to have that the side of it that faces outward is the side that's shaped like a dalad. On the Shor Rosh, on the back of the Shor Rosh. In other words, when you look at the knot, if you look at the back of the person's head, you should see the dalad shape. You actually have, as we know, there are two different major minhagim of the knot on the Shor Rosh. You have Or Minag, and as Or Minag is that the knot actually looks like a dalad. And then you have the parts of the veld, many Ashkenazic kehilas have the minag that actually the knot is shaped like a square. It's actually like two dalads, like this. It's like two dalads facing each other. But the point is, you look from the outside of the knot, you see the dalad shapes. As opposed to, in other words, you shouldn't have the opposite side of the knot facing out. And the same thing with Shoryad. With the Shoryad, the yud should be visible. It shouldn't be that it looks like a backwards yud. It should be like looks, the side of it that's facing out is the side that looks like a yud.
Some reason, the old film, I see some people having that, you know, the part that you put on the end of it, you see it up, some you see it down.
I don't know. I mean, it's supposed to look like a yud. So the end of it, I guess, can be tilted up a little bit, but basically it should be going in through the knot. Anyway, the point is that we see that the actual shape of the knot, that the actual type of knots you have is halacha mishmisinai. So what's the haba amina that you can make a bow tie in the first place? That we would say, if you could make a bow tie, then you would be allowed to take these tefillin in on Shabbos. The answer is exactly that. The onid lo hukein shira didhu. Okay, what you do is you make a knot of the shape that's supposed to be, but instead of an actual knot that would be permanent, instead you make a bow tie in that shape. Let's say you have, with any kind of knot, it's possible to have, you put in the ends of the string, or in this case, the ends of the resua in a certain way where if you pull on one of them, you could pull the whole thing loose.
We learned about this maybe 2 months ago, a month and a half ago.
I don't think we...
You mentioned about the garbage, Shabbos, take a garbage.
Oh, okay.
So you spoke about it.
Yeah, okay. So we talked about it in the Shabbos, actually. We talked about as far as bow ties, right. But, right, there's a difference also whether you're using two ends or whether you're using one end, right. But in general, any kind of knot that you make, it's possible to make the same kind of knot, make it that you put the strap in, you put the resua in one extra time in one place, let's say, in order that now you have someplace, an actual loop in it, where if you pulled it, the whole thing would come out. So conceivably, you could do the same thing with these tefillin. You make a temporary knot like that. You make a knot like that. It still has the shape of the dalet or the yud, but it's a bow tie in the sense that you could pull on it and the whole thing would come out. And therefore, you would be able to do that on Shabbos, except for the fact that according to Rabbi Yehuda, such a thing would be considered an actual knot anyway, and you can't do that on Shabbos.
So we're trying to make it look like tefillin, and not even though he's wearing it as
so what we're saying is,
tachshit.
Well, because again, well, that's what we're saying. Whether we said Shabbos man tefillin or Shabbos loves man tefillin, either way, the way that you're wearing it on Shabbos has to be similar to the way you wear it on weekdays. If we say Shabbos man tefillin and you're actually going to yoitz the mitzvah, then for sure you have to have the knots on it. But even if not, you have to have the same kind of, you have to have knots on it that would make it kosher on weekdays, even if we say Shabbos loves man tefillin. So what the Gemara is saying now is fine. What you do is you find these things, again, according to Rabbi Yehuda, we're saying that new ones it wouldn't work, and the reason is because there's no way of making knots, even temporary knots in them, that would make it kosher to wear. If it weren't for that problem, then a niva, according to Rabbi Yehuda, is considered kshira. You could conceivably do that. You make a dalet-shaped knot, except instead of making it in the regular way such that it's a permanent knot, you make it in a way that it could be pulled loose, and then it would still be valid as far as the halacha that you need a dalet-shaped knot, but it wouldn't be breaking Shabbos on a daraisa level because you haven't made a permanent knot. The halacha is not like Rabbi Yehuda, so you're allowed to make bow ties, right? Okay, so that's the thing. So that's the thing, though. The Rif and the Rambam and the Rosh all talk about that nevertheless there is this difference between Chadoshim and Yeshonim, and that requires us to say that you still do have to consider the Kameya problem, the problem that Rava had brought up before, that sometimes that a person might make a Kameya in the shape of Tefillin, and therefore if they're Chadoshim, then you can't be sure that it's not a Kameya. Okay, and again, you know, you have Rav Chista's and you have Abaya's ways of understanding the Braisa. Fine, but Rava has a different way of understanding it. And when we have Abaya and Rava, the halacha is like Rava.
Which means
therefore, so we do have, so there is, so we do have, that's a different, so we do have the different, we do accept Rav Shmuel bar Rav Yitzchok's father's Braisa, that the difference between Yeshonis and Kadoshis is whether they have the knots in them or not. But the problem is not so much that you can't make knots. The problem is if they don't have the knots in them, they might actually be Kameis. Okay. Talking about tefillin, talking about dinim of tefillin, the Gemara mentions a side thing. Amar Rav Chista Amar Rav, halakeach tefillin mimisha enim mumcha. If a person buys tefillin from somebody who is not known to be an expert. Now, Tosfos points out, l'chatchila, you're supposed to buy from an expert in the first place. This way, like this thing, we're going to talk about how many you have to open up and check. Don't do that, l'chatchila. Don't buy them from somebody off the street and then say, okay, I'll check them, because you might not. You might not buy it. It's a little bit of a bazillion to the tefillin to have to open up to have to take out the stitches and open them up to check them in the first place. And you might not even bother doing it. So better you should buy them from a mumcha. But let's say b'dieved you didn't. Then you have to check at least, let's say you bought a whole bunch of them, you bought a whole bundle of tefillin from him, not just one pair. So to say, in order to check whether he's a mumcha, you have to do bodek shtayim shal yad ba'achas shal rosh. You have to check two shal yads and one shal rosh of the whole set. Or shtayim shal rosh ba'achas shal yad, or two shal roshes and one shal yad. If all three of them check out and the writing is good and the bottom are good and so forth, then you know the guy is a mumcha, and now in the future you can buy from him and you don't need to check them ahead of time. What?
Regardless of where
no, that's what the Gemara is going to ask. Monifsha.
I know we touched this Gemara also.
Okay, I don't know. Monifsha. Well, we have dinim about tefillin and the Masechta Shabbos. I don't think we have this particular thing. So the Gemara asks Monifsha. Either way you look at it, why would you say you're talking about this guy is selling tefillin in large lots? Where did he himself get them from? Imechad gavra kozovin. If he himself bought them from one sofer, lived out oshalosh shoyad oshalosh shorosh. Then fine, okay, we need to check three in order to have a chazakah. But why do you need to check some shal yads and some shal roshes? Check three shal yads or three shal roshes, and then once you find all three of them are good, then you know they're all good. On the other hand, if this guy that you're buying from himself bought from different people, then you should need to check everyone individually, because just because you check, so you check three of them. You check three tefillin altogether. So what? Those three aren't necessarily written by the same sofer. The batim aren't made by the same batim macher. So how do you know? Just because you check some of them doesn't mean all of the rest of them are good. The answer is...
You have to rely on him as opposed to opening it up and looking at the
Well, that's the point. We're saying you have to open it up and look. But why do you have to look? Davka at two shol roshes and one shol yad, or vice versa.
You're going to rely on him if he tells you who we bought it.
Well, yeah, okay. You have to rely on him.
Well,
okay. The answer is lo olam mechad gavra zavin. We are talking about that he bought them all from one person. But we need to make sure that he's a mumcha in the shoyad and the shorosh. After all, they're written differently. You have in the shorosh, it's four different parchments. In the shoyad, it's one long one. The bakim are made a bit differently. Actually, much differently, because one has four compartments and one has one. You need to make sure that the guy knows what he's doing both with shoyad and shorosh. So therefore, you need to check two of one and one of the other.
Shaz was one big box also.
We're talking about the shayad, one big compartment, exactly. Yeah. Okay, so the Gemara asks, Amy, is that so? What do you mean that you need to check two shayads and one shalrosh, or two shalroshes and one shayad? V'hatani Rabba Bar Shmuel b'tfilin. Rabba Bar Shmuel taught a din as far as the din of tfilin. Boidek shalosh shayad v'shalrosh. You have to check three shayads and shalrosh. My lab, oy shalosh shoyad, oy shalosh shorosh. L'chora, that means either three shoyads or three shoroshes. So what are you, Rab, telling me that some of one and some of the other? The answer is like, that's not what he means. He means shalosh, altogether, you need to check three. Mehen shoyad, mehen shorosh. Some of them have to be shoyads, some of them have to be shoroshes, but not three of one, because if you check, let's say, three shoroshes, fine, you find the guy, the mumche, in writing shoroshes. You still don't know that he's a mumche in writing shoyads. So in the future, you want to be able to buy from this guy, from this middleman who's buying from a sofer, from one particular sofer, then you have to know that sofer knows how to do shoyads as well as shoroshes.
Yeah, shoyads much easier.
The shoyads are easier in a way, but still. Okay. But the Gemara says, "V'hotoni Rav Kahana." Okay, but didn't Rav Kahana teach a brisa but tefillin bodek shtayim shoyad v'shorosh? When it comes to tefillin, you only need to check two of them when you're buying from somebody: one shoyad and one shorosh. And Rav is telling us that you need three: two of one and one of the other. The answer is Homani Rebbe. The answer is that would be according to Rebbe. We have a machlokas in a number of places in Shas between Rebbe and Rav Shimon Gamliel. How many times do you need something to occur for it to be a chazaka? Rebbe says you only need two times, and that's enough for a chazaka. Rav Shimon Gamliel says you need three. So therefore, according to Rav Shimon Gamliel, you need to check three of them, and according to Rebbe, you need only two. So Rav Kahana's Brai says according to Rebbe. So the question is, E Rebbe Ema Sefer. So if you're going to say that this Braisa is according to Rebbe, then look at the next part of the Braisa, V'chein b'tzvas ha-sheni, V'chein b'tzvas ha-shlichi. The same thing is true as far as the second batch and as far as the third batch. In each batch, it sounds like in the first batch, you check two of them. And now you know the rest of that batch is good. That batch being they all come from one sofer. Then you have a different batch which this vendor may have bought from a different sofer. You know, like you have nowadays. You go, let's say, to you go to Hamefitz, or you go to Araita or whatever. You know, they buy tefillin from many different sofers. So you have, let's say, you buy a whole batch of tefillin from them that are all tied together, let's say, in one bundle. So they all came from one particular sofer. Then you have a different batch that came from a different sofer and so forth. So it sounds like we're saying that within each batch, you need to check two of them, and then one shol yad and one shol rosh, and then each batch is known to be good. And then once you check three batches like that, then you know that any other batch you buy from him in the future also comes from an expert cipher. So then why are we saying three? The Rebbe Shlishi Yisrei. If the bride says, according to Rebbe, Rebbe doesn't hold you should need a third batch in the first place. According to him, you should only need two out of each of two batches. Once you check altogether four tefillin, one shol yad and one shol rosh from the first batch, and one shol yad and one shol rosh from the second batch, then according to Rebbe, that's it. You're done. So why are we mentioning three batches? That seems to be. So are we going according to the Shimon Gamliel, or are we going according to Rebbe? The answer is Moida Rebbe with Svosim, because Rebbe will agree when it comes to batches. Just because you checked one batch doesn't necessarily tell you something about the second one, because the Mitzrei Tzvosa Gabri Zobin. It's likely that each batch came from a different sofer. So therefore, yes, so Rebbe would agree that it's good enough. Rebbe would say, in other words, it's good enough within each batch itself. You only need to check two, one shol yad and one shol rosh, because then once you do that, you know the rest of that batch comes from the same sofer, and therefore you're good. But each batch may come from a different sofer, so therefore you have to check. So therefore you have to check more of them. So then the question is, so then, then why is it good enough to check three batches, and now you know from then on it's good? Based on that logic, you still need to check every batch individually. You need to check two of them because they're going to come from a different sofer. The answer is, you're right. You're right. What the Braisa is telling us, what Rav Kahana's Braisa is telling us, when it says that you have to check three batches, it doesn't mean you can stop after three batches. It means to tell us not like Rebbe's usual chazaka. Rebbe's usual rule of chazaka is that two are enough. But here, because each batch, each tzvas is likely to be from a different sofer, then yes, you need to check all of them. So yes, as a matter of fact, you would have to check the fourth, you would have to check the fifth. It mentions third, in other words, to say, don't think that here it's like Rebbe's usual rule, where two are enough, you need to check three, because there are three of them. And if there are four of them, you need to check four of them. And if there are five, you need to check five of them. You need to check as many batches as there are, but within each one, according to Rebbe, you only need to check two of them. Because the chazaka on one batch doesn't tell us anything about another batch, because they may have come from a different sofer.
Which chazaka would you say three usually?
We'd say chazaka is three, it says according to Rav Shimon Gamliel. But according to Rebbe, you would need only two. The Gemara mentions, it actually refers to a Gemara in Yevamos that discusses this whole point. The Gemara ends up saying there that there are actually sometimes when we follow Rebbe and sometimes when we follow Rav Shimon Gamliel. There are certain halachas where we say that two is enough for a chazaka, and certain halachas where we say they need three.
Then actually we learned to empower the Acharon, but that's what
we're doing. Yeah, okay. Fine. Now, the Mishnah had said, Motzim Tzvosim or Krichos, that if you find the tefillin in the field, in Tzvosim or in Krichos, so then we said what you do is, you wait until after Shabbos and then bring them all in together, as we'll see in a couple of lines why. So first we have to figure out, my Tzvosim or my Krichos, what do those terms mean? They both mean large bundles, large batches of tefillin. The difference is, tzvosim means zavi. Tzvosim means that they're tied together, every pair individually. In other words, there's a bunch of pairs, you have a whole pile of tefillin over there, but within that pile, each one, you have the shoyad and the shorosh are together. And then you have another shoyad and shorosh together, and then you have a whole bunch of them wrapped up together, let's say. As opposed to krichas, to kricham turba, krichas just means they're one big pile, or one big wrap, without the shoyads and the shoroshes being paired up.
Now, you don't say that you have to leave it because it could be a sin, because it's the bizoyan.
The matter, right now we're dealing with the matter of bizoyan. The question of whether there's a simon on them, whether you need to find the owners, that we can deal with after Shabbos. Shabbos. Right now, we're dealing with on Shabbos. What do we do in order to save them? Like Rashi said at the beginning of the Perek, you have, for example, dogs could get to them. Other, you were going to talk about in the Gemara, soon goyim could get to them or whatever. So therefore, we need to save them. Afterwards, you'll deal with simonim.
So we have a bunch of Rashi standing and wait.
Have to wait. So it's machshech aleinu mavion. So we said you wait until after Shabbos is over and then you bring them in. So the question is, v'amai, why should you have to wait till after Shabbos? Lailinu zug zug. Bring them in one pair at a time, like we said before. So Rav Yitzchak, Breder of Yehuda, says, my father, Rav Yehuda, explained to me that what we mean is, what do we mean about why do we have to wait until Shabbos is over? It's like this. It depends how many there are. Kol she'ilu machnisan zug zug. If there's enough time that if you go in one pair at a time, the kol is kodim shkia sachama, and you'll finish with all of them before shkia. Machnisan zug zug. Then the chachamim allow you to bring them one pair at a time. The Eloi, if there's not going to be enough time to finish them before Shvia, you're anyway going to have to come back after Shabbos to get the remaining ones, because you're not going to have time to get them all before Shabbos is over. Therefore, Machshech Aleinu Mavion, then the Chachamim therefore don't allow you to bend the rules of Shabbos and take them in one pair at a time, because anyway you're going to have to come back for some of them after Shabbos. So at this point, they're going to tell you, just wait until after Shabbos and carry them all in together. Rather than wearing them on Shabbos, which after all is a little bit, which after all is bending the rules d'rabbanon of Shabbos.
What was carrying it? Because you don't want to carry it less than 4 hours.
That's, we're going to talk about that too.
Even though he brought in 99, there's less of a design for that, and he left one, so, I mean.
But still, he has to come back for that one, so therefore, at this point, you might as well carry them all in together, rather than at this point, you might as well carry them all in.
Chance, because so going coming between.
And you're standing there. And it's on the ground, or where do you find it on the ground?
Actually, you found that on the ground, but
it's
less of a bezayin than to be mevaza Shabbos is also a bezayin. So we'll get to, back to that point in a minute. Yeah. Okay. So then we said over sakana machatsan v'holich. We said if there's a danger, then you just cover them up and you leave. So the question is, if it's dangerous, then you carry them less than 4 amas at a time. Omer Rav, so Rav says, or on the side over here, it says Rabba, because on Omer Beis, at the top of Omer Beis, we're going to have Abaya talking to him. Abaya was born long after Rav passed away. So Abaya can't be talking to Rav. But if it's Rabba, then it works, because Abaya was Rabba's nephew and his Talmud. Another possibility is actually the Abaya on the days. There's an Abaya mentioned in some places in the Gemara named Abaya Kshisha, Abaya the Elder. He was one of the earlier Amiroyim. He was in the times of Rav, so maybe it means him. Okay, whatever it is, anyway. So Rav or Rabba says, like Kasha.
Abaya didn't live past 40, did he?
What?
Abaya didn't live past 40 or something?
Abaya lived to 60, actually, the Gemara says. Rava or Rabba lived to 40, yeah. Okay, anyway, so Omer Rav, like Kasha, Habasakonas goyim, habasakonas listim. It depends whether the danger we're talking about is goyim or thieves. Now, Rashi has two explanations on this. Rashi's first explanation is that goyim, we're talking about the problem is that a goyim might do a bezoyin to the tefillin. They might treat them disrespectfully or whatever. As opposed to, so then what you do is you carry them pochus midal ramas, because then if you leave them over there, then the goyim are going to take them and do who knows what with them. As opposed to where there's listim, where there's robbers involved, but the robbers are Jews. So then they may kill the guy for his money, but they're not going to go and be mevaza tefillin. They both have respect for tefillin. So then you just cover them up. We're not worried that the list. So then you can't stay over there. So that's the difference. In other words, if the sakona is goyim might be mevaza the tefillin, there's no actual danger from the goyim themselves that they might harm you. Then fine, you wait there until after Shabbos and then you carry them home. As opposed to if the sakona is from Jewish robbers, then you can't stay there because they might mug you. Okay, you're not carrying money on Shabbos, but still, they might take whatever you have or kill you or whatever. But the tefillin are going to be safe, and the tefillin they're going to leave alone. So therefore, just cover them and go away, and that way you're safe and the tefillin will be safe. That's Rashi's first explanation. Rashi's second explanation is that which he prefers is that goyim over here means, sakonas goyim, means that when the goyim made a gzera that you're not allowed to wear tefillin. As we learned about in Masechta Shabbos, where at one point, for example, they made a gzera that anybody who wears tefillin were going to knock out their brains. So then, what is, so because of that kind of sakana, so you can't very, so then, in other words, so we can't say in that case, so then the chachamim tell, so then don't wear them in one pair at a time, because then the goyim might catch you. Certainly don't wait until after Shabbos and carry them all in, because you're going to be caught with that kind of contraband, you're going to be in great danger from the goyim. In that case, just cover them and leave, you have no choice. As opposed to when the danger is just, when the danger is just listim, we're talking about goyish listim, fine. But, so if you can't stay there because you're afraid of goyish listim, then you carry them pachas nidalachmas. Okay. So, Omalei Abaya, so Abaya says to Rabba or whoever, the Mai Ukimtel Masnissin. So what are you explaining the Mishnah? The Sakonas Goyim, you're saying it's talking about danger from Goyim. Now, according to Rashi's first explanation, it comes out that what we're saying, the distinction between Goyim and Listim, applies only to the particular din that we mentioned at the end. If you can't bring them all in before Shabbos is over, then what do? Do you wait there till after Shabbos, or do you just cover them and leave? As opposed to, according to Rashi's second explanation, what we're saying is this distinction between Sakonas Goyim and Sakonas Listim, when do we say you take them in one at a time versus wait there till after Shabbos, as the case may be, versus, as the Braisa says, you carry them pachas midal amas, is when there's the danger of Goyim because they're Xeris versus robbers. That if the danger is because of the goyim and the uxeris, then you can't take them in one at a time or all together after Shabbos, because if you get caught with tefillin, you're going to be in great danger. As opposed to when the danger is only listim, so then, in the case, so if the danger is listim, then if you ideally you still bring them in one at a time. But if you can't do that because you're afraid that the listim are going to get you, then you you can't wait there till after Shabbos, then you just cover them up and leave.
No, that's the last thing we just said. You should carry lesson four.
That's the thing. You're right. What we're saying is then, if the danger is listim and you can't stay there till after Shabbos, don't leave it over there, because after all, it is goyish listim, and they're gonna do bizarreness to the tefillin. Then you're right. Then we carry it pachas midal damas. Right. That's yeah. Okay. So the question is, Abaya asks, Ema Sefer, look at the next part of the Mishnah, where the Mishnah had said, Reb Shimon Omer Noistan Lachavera, the Chavera Lachavera. Reb Shimon says, you give them to your friend, and your friend gives them to his, and the friend gives them to his friend, etc. And each person is transferring it less than Dalamas. If you're going to say that there's danger from the goyim, kosher came to Avshim Milsa, there's even more piercing to it. According to Rashi's first explanation, the question is, if we're saying that Jewish listim, again, according to Rashi's first explanation, the listim we're talking about over here about Jewish ones, who are not going to be mevazeh the tefillin, so then why is Reb Shimon allowing you to give it to somebody else, and somebody else gives it to somebody else? Isn't that making more of a bizoyan for Shabbos? Yes, there's no reason, you don't have to worry about saving the tefillin, because the Jewish listim are not going to harm them. So therefore, why is Reb Shimon allowing you to make up like a public chilul Shabbos, or whatever, not really chilul Shabbos, but fine, like a public thing that where it looks like you're being careless with the dinim of Shabbos and carry them pachas pachas midal damas. According to Rashi's second explanation, the question is, if you're telling me that the Mishnah is talking about where there's danger from Goyim, as opposed to the Braisa is talking about where the danger is because of Goyim, because of the Xeris, as opposed to the Braisa is talking about a Sakana from Listim, from robbers, then why is Reb Shimon telling you, have somebody give it to somebody else, etc.? If it's talking about a time when there's Xera against Tefillin, you don't want more people to be involved. The more people involved, the more likely, the more people you're putting in danger. The answer is chasuri mechsura. You're right. Mishnah is actually missing a phrase. V'hachi chatoni. What it means to say is like this: b'med borim amurim. When is this talking about that you wait, that you carry them in one pair at a time, you wear them in one pair at a time, or you cover them and leave them? Is the sakonas goyim? Is when the sakana is from the where you leave them, where you cover them and leave them, is where the sakana is from goyim because of the xeris. But if the danger is from robbers, then you can carry them less than 4 amas at a time. And Reb Shimon says, in that case, instead of you personally carrying it less than 4 amas at a time, you give it to somebody else who gives it to somebody else, etc. So that answers our question, because when it's Sakonis Listim, there's no problem of Absha Milsa, there's no problem that you're putting more people in danger, because as it is, the danger is not, the danger is not that the danger is only that if you leave the Tefillin there, the Listim, the Goyish Listim, are going to do whatever to them. But like this, there's no problem, it's okay if people get caught with Tefillin on them, there's no Xera at the time of people being caught with Tefillin. Therefore, so the Tanakhama is saying that it's, for the reasons that we're going to explain in a second, it's better if you carry it less than 4 amas at a time, as opposed to Rav Shimon says it's better if you have a bunch of people involved, each one of them transferring it to the other one.
But if you have too many people, each one puts a person, takes a
person. No, they're not actually wearing it. They're just, you're taking
it. Once you do that, you have so many people, each one should put a person film and carry it and walk off.
If they can do that, but yeah.
I mean, usually when you walk in the woods, you find film, you don't have a bunch of people with you.
Right. No. So the question is, with my Kumbhasagi, in that case, if we understand it that way, then what's the underlying argument between the Tanakhama and Rav Shimon? So like this, Marisava Pochas Me'aba Amas Odif, the Tanakhama holds it's better that you carry it less than 4 amas at a time. The E Amit Noisman Lachaberim, Chaber Lachaberim, because if you're going to give it to one person, who's going to give it to another person, etc. Avshem Milsa to Shabbos, you're making a very public thing that you're carrying something on Shabbos, and people are going to come to have to think less of Shabbos. They're going to think it's not so important to not carry on Shabbos, because you see, we just had 100 people involved over here, one person giving it to the other one. So therefore, the Tanakhama says better that you should carry it less than 4 amas at a time, and that way it stays private. That way, the whole world doesn't know that we're transferring things on Shabbos. Umar Savar, whereas Rav Shimon holds, Noisim Achaveri Odif, it's still better to give it to somebody else. The Amit Melichan Pochas Me'aba Amis, because if you're going to say you yourself should carry it less than 4 amas at a time, Zimnin De Lava Daite, you might get careless, you might not realize at some point how far you walk, but also last year now, Abamis Rishasanabim, you're going to wind up carrying it 4 amas Rishasanabim and actually be over on an Isur Daraisa. So therefore, better to be giving it to another person who's going to give it to another person, etc., where there's no possibility that they're going to end up being Mechal Shabbos. Okay, it's Avsha Milsa. It makes it that now a lot more people know what's going on. Fine, but that's still better than the chances that somebody might be, that the person himself might be over on Issa Daraisa.
Just thinking according to what you just said now, if the person, you worry about him walking more than 4 amas, so he puts it on and he walks home with it, it's also
fine if he's able to put it on. But let's say there's a lot of them, or he's not going to have time. If he's not going to have the time to finish them all off before Shabbos. Yeah. Tosfos points out that Rav Shimon would probably agree, if you don't have any other people with you, then sure, you yourself can carry it less than Dalet Amos. After all, we learned at the end of Masechta Shabbos, you have a case where a person has his money bag with him at the beginning of Shabbos, and we say the Chachamim know that a person is not just going to leave his money over there, so we tell him, ideally, put it on your donkey, or give it to a guy, or whatever, but if you don't have any of those options, then you carry it Pachas Pachas Dalet Amos. So Tosfos says the same thing would be over here. Rav Shimon is just saying, if you have a choice between you yourself carrying it Pachas Pachas Dalet Amos versus giving it to somebody else, or give it to somebody else, etc., better to do it that way.
They're giving one to another. He's saying it's a milta then in terms of design Shabbos. Isn't the opposite? People will say they're careful not to just one person carrying the whole thing.
That's fine, but there's still a certain zilzal of Shabbos that we're making, that we're being makel so much on Shabbos that we're allowing one person to give something to somebody else and then transfer it way all the way across Rosh Hashanah. It's still, there's a certain bazillion of Shabbos involved in Zudaki. So it could zilzal Shabbos today. There's more of a,
I would say that if you see this tefillin, obviously, if someone finds a metziah, so they're making the Shabbos cheap. But if it's tefillin, obviously, we know tefillin, you can't,
the Chachamim, rather, the Tanakhama, our Mishnah is still concerned that people are going to start getting careless with Shabbos then. We have to remember, after all, we learned at the beginning of Masechta Shabbos, Hotzah is a Malacha Grua. Hotzah is one of those things, you wouldn't even know it was a Malacha if it weren't for the Torah telling you that it is. And unlike most other Malachas where we say that, you have whatever was done in the Mishkan, and then we ourselves derive what are the various told us of it when it comes to Hotzah. It's not like that. It's only the ones that the Chachamim told us are Hotzah and nothing else. The people, it's one of those Malachas, it's a Malacha that it's not so obvious even that it's a Malacha, and people are likely to get more careless with it. So we need to, We said in the Mishnah of Achein Benoi, we said the same thing with his son. So the question is, Benoi my boy, awesome. What's his son doing out in the field? We're not just talking about that they took a walk, and they're not just talking that they took a walk, and now the kid is having a tantrum and doesn't want to go home. So the answer is Dvei Menashe Tana. They taught in the yeshiva Menashe v'shiyodatu imay basada. The case is that his wife, that his mother gave birth to him in the field. So then we're saying, so then in the Mishnah we said that Rav Shimon had said you give the baby to somebody else. Nois la chaver, chaver la chaver, afilu hein meya, even if there's 100 of them. Yeah. So umay afilu hein meya. So what do we mean by adding even if there's 100 of them? Meaning the afagav de kashula yoda. Rav Shimon is continuing. He's saying even though the baby has a harder time of it when you give him from one hand to another, a baby prefers to stay with the one who's holding him now. They don't like being passed from one person to another, so it's harder on the baby. Afilu hachi ha'adifa. Nevertheless, Rav Shimon says that's still better rather than you yourself carrying it. Pachas pachas midal ramas. It's still better than you yourself carrying it. Pachas pachas vidal ramas, because what happens if you accidentally at one point carry it full 4 ounces? Now, obviously, we're not talking about where the baby's life is in danger in the field over there, no question. We're talking about just that's uncomfortable over there. Let's say, you know, it's this time of year, let's say, it's a little bit cool in the field compared to in the house, and therefore it's better if we can get the baby someplace a little bit warm.
Maybe he's born.
Right. So maybe like the weather we have now, maybe it would be a second. But like, let's say, you know, you're talking about it's 70 degrees outside, let's say. So, you know, the baby's not in danger of freezing, but it still would be more comfortable and yeah. Okay.
What about the mother? She just gave birth. How should
you? So the mother, okay, once she gave birth, she herself, then we can be Machal Shabbos for her. But the baby, we can also be Machal Shabbos for what's necessary for the baby. But the question is, how necessary is this versus what can we do for the baby in the field? So Rav Shimon is saying, okay, you could, in principle, do things for it in the field, but nevertheless, you can give it to another person or give it to another person, etc., and bring it into the house.
It's interesting that they bring this situation where a baby is born. Baby's born. We all know a baby's born and it's dangerous the first wherever you are.
Again, but the point is, so we're not talking about over here where there's the Pekuach Nefesh involved, we're just talking about something where maybe the baby would be more comfortable in the house or something.
Okay.
Then we said in the Mishnah of Yehuda, I'm a noisin chavis v'chola, noisin adam chavis v'chola. Rabbi Yehuda had said by the same token, one person can give a barrel to somebody else who gives it to somebody else, etc., and they can carry it even outside the tomb. So the question is, what's going on? The last letter of Yehuda Hoditznan, doesn't Rabbi Yehuda agree with what we learn in a Mishnah in Beitza? Habehema v'akelim kiragle abaylim, an animal or kelim go according to the feet of the owner, meaning let's say, for example, on Yom Tov, if you borrow an animal or you borrow kelim from somebody on Yom Tov, you can only carry them within the area, within the Tum Shabbos of the person you borrowed it from. So let's say, for example, you live in this city. The other guy lives in this city. You walked over because less than a Tchum Shabbos apart, but you can only carry it as far as this person would be able to go. He's only able to go till here, let's say. So that's it. You can carry it. You can't carry it further in that direction, even though that's within your own Tchum. So why is Rabbi Yehuda saying over here that one person can give it to another, etc., and it can go outside the Tchum? It should have to be limited to the Tchum of the original owner. Amr Shlokish, Mishum of Levi Sava. So the answer is, Rish Lakish answers in the name of Levi Sava, Hachab Mayaskinen, Bima'ara Mechavis Lachavis. The case that Yehuda is talking about is you're not carrying the barrel as is. You're pouring the water, you're pouring the water in the barrel from one barrel into another. So in other words, you have the first person starts out with a barrel of water. He pours the water into a barrel that's being held by the next guy. The next guy pours the water into the next barrel, etc. And then the water is able to travel even outside the tomb. But Rabbi Yehuda l'taymei, so Rabbi Yehuda would be going according to his own svara. Rabbi Yehuda says that water is not considered to have a mamoshus. It's not considered to be something that has substance where there would be an issue of tchumen on it. Ditznan, namely, we learn also in Beitza over there, where it talks about these dinim of things being limited to a tchum. The Mishnah says, so you have a case over there, where you have a case over there of a woman who borrowed from another woman spices for a dish that she's making, or let's say that what's relevant over here is she borrowed water or salt to make dough. So she herself has flour, but she didn't have water and she didn't have salt, so she borrowed it from a neighbor. So then we're saying that the resulting dough is actually, it's limited to the common tchum of the both of them. Which means, let's say, for example, so we're talking their neighbors. They both live in the same city. But let's say, for example, Sarah supplied the flour. Rachel, let's say, supplied the water and the salt. Now, let's say before Yom Tov, Sarah had made an Eruv Tchumen in this direction. Rachel had made an Eruv Tchumen in this direction. So if the Tchumen don't overlap, then you can't do anything with this dough. If the Tchumen overlap, then you can only carry it within the overlapping area. So let's say one of them has an Eruv Tchumen, 1,000 Amos east of the city, and the other one, 1,000 Amos west of the city. So fine, they both have 2,000 Amos in the middle where they can carry, but not outside of that. So we see, and that's the point of the Tanakhama. And the Mishnah continues, Rabbi Yehuda poter b'mayim, Rabbi Yehuda paters when it comes to the water, because the water is not considered to have mamoshes. So in other words, Rabbi Yehuda says, the fact that Rachel supplied the water doesn't matter when the dough can be taken anywhere where Sarah can go.
What are you doing with this dough on Shabbos?
Well, we're not on dough, we're not on Shabbos, we're looking on Yom Tov.
Oh, Masechta Beit
talks about the dinim of Yom Tov.
Okay.
So to the extent that these dinim apply to Shabbos, then yeah, I mean, you can borrow something from your neighbor on Shabbos, but I mean, generally you don't have the issues of carrying it outside the tchum, because you can't carry it outside, you can't carry it in Rosh Hashanah anyway. So the dinim are more relevant to Yom Tov. But here, in our Mishnah, we're talking about Shabbos. Rabbi Yehuda is saying that one person can give to another, who can give to another, etc. So now we're saying, we're talking about that you're pouring the water from one barrel into another. And the same way as Rabbi Yehuda says over there, when it comes to Yom Tov, that the water is not considered to have mamoshes. And therefore, the fact that Rachel supplied the water, we don't care about her tum. We focus only on Sarah's tum, the one who supplied the flour. The same way over here, we would say the water is not considered to have mamoshes, and we don't care what tum it started in the first place. So umay loy tahalach zu. So then when the chachamim, so when the chachamim answer him that it shouldn't be able to go more, shouldn't be able to go outside of the owner's tum. What does that mean? Rabbi Yehuda is agreeing that the barrel is not going outside the tum. What it means is the chachamim are saying loy tahalach masha bazu yosim eragli abaylim. They're saying fine, but the point is you started out with a barrel full of water. The barrel itself is limited to the owner's tum. Therefore, the water that was inside that barrel should also be limited to that tum. They're arguing as Rabbi Yehuda and saying, you're telling me that water has no mamoshes. We can't agree with that. The barrel itself is limited. Therefore, the water should also be. The problem with that understanding is, but you know what? Rabbi Yehuda's din in Masechta Beitza is talking about you can't see the water be'ein. It's embedded into the dough. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda can say that the flour is the main thing of the dough. The water is not really the main thing. But when you have water all by itself, which is what we're talking about over here, where do you ever see that Rabbi Yehuda holds it shouldn't have a tum? In fact, we see, even when it comes to a pot of food, Rabbi Yehuda holds that water is not bottle in it. You want to tell me that water all by itself should be bottle? The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, also in connection with those dinim, about food and things, about the tum of Behema and Kalim and so forth, on Yom Tov, Rabbi Yehuda, Maim u'melach b'telin v'isa, water and salt can be bottled in the dough, the ein b'telin v'kdera, but if you have the same kind of thing where Sarah is making a pot of food and she borrows from her neighbor water or salt to put in the food, then the water is not bottled. Mipnei roitva, because a pot of food has liquid in it. It has noticeable liquid or gravy or soup or whatever in it. So unlike in dough, where the water is bottled and you don't see any water in the dough afterwards, it's holding the dough together, of course, we don't actually see it. But in a kedera, you do see it. So even when it's in a kedera, Rabbi Yehuda holds that it's not bottled. Certainly when it's by itself, it shouldn't be bottled. In fact, Mefarshim point out, Levi Sava, who first pointed out this thing that we're talking about, pouring water from one barrel to another. He had to know of this braisa also, but he figured that the difference is, in a kedera, you would say the water is more important because the food needs water in it. You make a pot of cholent, for example, you want to have that there should be water in it. And after all, the water now has the flavor of the cholent and whatever, so it's different. Maybe he would say that water by itself is weaker. And the answer is that no, we're saying that that water by itself, Rabbi Yehuda would also hold, has mamoshes. The only time you could say it's bottle is where you don't even see it the egg, namely in the dough. So therefore, so we can't say that we're talking about, Rabbi Yehuda says that we're talking about pouring the water from one barrel into another and taking it outside the tchum that way. Ella, Omar Rava, so Rava gives a different answer. Hocha b'chavis shekonsa shvisa, we're talking about the barrel was kona shvisa, the barrel had a place, the barrel belonged to somebody before Yom Tov or before Shabbos, so therefore it has its tchum. Umayim shaloi konu shvisa askinan. We're talking about though the water was not kevei was not kona shvisa. We learned earlier in the Masada that when you have, for example, a river or a river or a mayon or whatever that you draw water from, the water is not considered to be kona shvisa until somebody actually draws it. So it wasn't kona shvisa at the beginning of Shabbos. Debot l'chavis l'gabi mayim. And what happens is you are talking about giving the chavis itself with the water to somebody else. Not like Levi Sava said that we're talking about pouring the water from one barrel to another. We're carrying the barrel from one person is handing the barrel to the next one, but the barrel is bottled to the water. Kiditznan, like we learn, the water itself was not kona shvisa.
It's bottled to the barrel.
It was, no, not that the water was bottled to the barrel. The water itself was not kona shvisa, and Tosfos explains that we're talking about over here that nobody who's handling this water intends to be kona, so therefore the water is still considered hefker. Like when the water was in the nahar, in the river in the first place, it's not kona shvisa until somebody actually draws it. So therefore, yes, somebody drew it and put it in the barrel, but they weren't intending to be kona. So therefore, it doesn't have a tchum. So the water doesn't have a tchum. It can go as far as you want it to go, says Rabbi Yehuda. And the barrel is bottled to the water because the barrel is only there in order to hold the water. One second. Kiditznan, as we learned in a Mishnah in Shabbos, hamotzi achai b'mita, if a person carries out a live person in a bed on Shabbos, now carrying a live person is not an issur d'oraisa because chai noseh esasmo, a living person helps carry their own weight, so you can't say that you're doing the malacha by yourself, and therefore, so if you carry out a live person in a bed, potter afal mita, then you potter also for carrying the bed, because the bed is tofel, secondary to the person. And the Mishnah continues, similarly, Hamotzi Oichon Pochas Mikashir Bekli. If a person carries out food less than the shir, we learned in Masechta Shabbos that the shir to be chayav for carrying food on Shabbos is a kigrigeres, the size of a dried fig. So if you carry out less than that in a keli, potter afal kli, then again, you're also potter for the keli, because the kli is tofel to the food, and since you're potter for the food, then you're potter for the keli. So the same thing over here. Since the water doesn't have a mokum shvisa, then therefore the barrel is tofel to it, and it doesn't need it. Masiv Rabbi Yosef.
Even though we said that it would be your kohen shvisa with the barrel.
Now, the barrel was kona shvisa before Shabbos, but now that you have water in it, which was not kona shvisa, then the barrel, Rava is arguing, now the barrel is bottled to the water, and therefore you can carry the water as far as you want, and with it you can carry the barrel, which is now toppled to the water.
Even though water you need for living, you need every water for everything, considered essential.
Yeah, but it's still not, if it wasn't kona shvisa, it wasn't kona shvisa, yeah. Must be Rabbi Yosef, but Rabbi Yosef says, I have a contradiction to that though. A Braisa says, Rabbi Yehuda Omer b'Sheyara, Rabbi Yehuda says, when it comes to a Sheyara, a caravan of people that are camping out for Shabbos, where then they don't have very much water, then you can pass a barrel from one person to another, implying b'Sheyara ain shalei b'Sheyara loy. We're only allowing this heter where there's a Sheyara, it sounds like, where you're short on water, so therefore the Chachamim are allowing you to give a barrel of water from one to the other. If you're talking about the scenario where, like Rava is saying, where the water was not kona shvisa, then it doesn't have to be dafka by a Sheyara. Anytime you would be allowed to do that, because the water is allowed to go wherever you want. So Rabbi Yosef says, yeah, actually, our Mishnah is talking about a Shiara. So there's a bit of a case of an oinus. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda is allowing you to do it. But he wouldn't allow you to do it otherwise. In other words, fine. It's a matter of tchumin. Tchumin adrabbanon. So fine. So tchumin will allow you to relax that rule of tchumin, which is drabbanon, when we're talking about a Shiara where they're badly in need of water. But not Sam. If you're talking about in the city or whatever, where it's easy to get water, then Rabbi Yehuda would not allow that. Abaya Omer. Abaya says no. If that was the case, Bishayara, if we were talking about in a caravan where they're short on water, Afilu Chavis Shekonsa Shvisa or Mayim Shekonsa Shvisa, then we would allow it even if the barrel on the water were Kona Shvisa. Because again, we would relax the rules for them. Again, we're not talking about Pikuach Nefesh. We're not talking about whether if they don't drink by the end of Shabbos, they're going to die of thirst. Then of course, Pikuach Nefesh, Derech HaKolat Torah Kolah. Again, like we said before about the case, about the baby born in the field, we're talking about there's just going to be a little bit of discomfort, but still, Rabbi says, in that case, the Chum would still allow it more generally to go outside the Torah. Even if the water was Kona Shvisa, even if the water actually, even if somebody was cutting the water before Shabbos. So when are we talking about, like Rava had said, where we're talking about it's not a Shayyara, and the Chavis belonged to somebody, it was Kona Shvisa, the water was not Kona Shvisa at the beginning of Shabbos, because nobody owned it, and even now, like Tosva said, nobody was Kona it yet, so like Rava had said, in other words, not...
You put into the Chavis, your Kona, it's your Chavis.
Yeah, because you can still have in mind, I'm putting it in my Chavis, but I'm not intending to be Kona. Rav Ashi Yomer, Rav Ashi gives a different answer. Hocha b'chavis dehefker eskinen, umayin dehefker eskinen. Here we're talking about the barrel and the water on both hefker. So they weren't Kona Shvisa, either one. So that's another answer is that we're talking about everything over here is hefker. The barrel and the water, and as Tosfa says, nobody had any intention to be koina any of it. So now it can go as far as you want. Obviously you still have to have, you can only pass it to one person who can pass it to the next person because you still can't carry it. But here we're dealing with the question of the tchum. Uman omruloi. So then when we say in the Mishnah that omruloi, the Chachamim said to him that it shouldn't be able to go further than Ragle HaBailim. What Ragle HaBailim? If we're talking about over here, according to Rav Ashi, that everything over here, the barrel and the water are hefker, then there's no Bailim. The answer is Rav Yechon ben Nuri. That would be according to Rav Yechon ben Nuri, the Omar, that he says, as we learned earlier in the Masechta, Chefze Hefker Koinen Shvisa. He says that Hefker items are Koinen Shvisa where they are. We had a discussion over there about a person who fell asleep outside the city. Is he Koinen himself a Tchum Shabbos or not? Rav Yechon ben Nuri had said that not, because he's like an object of Hefker. And we had a more general discussion over there on that question. Or Chetze Hefker, do we say that wherever they were at the beginning of Shabbos is where they're Kona Shvisa, and therefore and that becomes their Tchum for the rest of that Shabbos, or the rest of that Yavdiv, or not? Does it only go according to the first person who was Zoycha in them? Rabbi Yechon ben Nuri holds Chetze Hefker Kona Shvisa. So according to him, wherever this water and wherever this barrel was at the beginning of Shabbos is where Tchum is measured from. So what does he mean when he uses the expression, this shouldn't be able to go further than the Ragle HaBailim? What Bailim? It's Hefter. It means, we can't allow this water and this Chavis to go further than a Keli that does have an owner. In other words, if it had an owner limited to a certain Tchum Shabbos, the Tchum Shabbos of the owner, the same thing. Now it needs to be limited to its own Tchum Shabbos, the Tchum that it itself was koina at the beginning of Shabbos. And therefore, he says, I can't agree with you, Rabbi Yehuda, that you should be allowed to carry it pachas pachas migalaranis. The Rambam and Shulchan Aruch paskin like Rabbi Yehuda, that, and in fact, like Rava's explanation of it, we're not just talking in a Shayara, we're talking more generally. Yes, you have a Chavis like that, you can pass it to another person who passes it to another person, pochus talking it out amis, and carry it as far as you want, even outside the tchum, because we're talking about that it was Hefker. So it was in Rambam Perakaf of last week, in Perak Yudbeis, the Rambam mentioned that point.
If it wouldn't be Hefker, then it would be like...
Well, if it wouldn't be Hefker, then it's limited to the tchum of the original owner. But since it's Hefker, then there's no limit on it, because Halacha is not Chefze Hefker, not Koinen Shvisa, and therefore, yeah, you can take it as far as you want. So each person is transferring less than 4 amas, so you don't have a problem with that, but you're able to take it outside the tchum.
You have in mind not to be, not to own it.
Everybody, as Tosfa says, that's, they would have to have in mind not to be Koinen, because if they're Koinen, then yeah, then it has their tchum. Yeah.
So you need water, make sure you find the water that does most of the money.
Okay.
Everyone, question.
Yeah, Dan.
When you transfer the barrel to someone else, you do amshacha and you're koine.
You could, picking up something is not necessarily koine, only if you have in mind to do a kenyan. think of it. I mean, you look at something in the store. You pick up something to see if you want to buy it. Are you koneh at that point? No, only if you had in mind to. So, yeah, I mean, you can pick up something and not intend to be koneh. So that would be how it would have to be over here.
And, but so if you intend to be koneh, then you cannot transfer it.
What do you mean? If you intend to be koneh, then at that point, then Tchum Shabbos kicks in, and then you can't transfer it outside your Tchum. Yeah.
Okay.
That's Tosfos mentioned that point. Yochel lo tziyam chutz l'tchum shezochah behen tchila. So let's say Tosfos says you could have. Why are we passing it from one person to another anyway? Tosfos learns you could have. Let's say you're passing it to the next person so they can take a drink, and then they're passing it to the next person so they can take a drink. Like Rabbi Yosef had said, we're talking about a shayara, that we're talking about a caravan where they're all thirsty because they're short of water. But even we said Abaya had said and Rava had said that we don't necessarily need to be talking about a caravan. But still, why would you be passing the chalbis from one person to another to pass this so they can drink? So each person is only intending to be koneh what they're drinking, and fine, then they're passing the rest of it on to the next person who's then gonna take a drink. So therefore, nobody is koneh it, and therefore they can carry it as far as they want, says Rabbi Yehuda.
Mm-hmm. That's halacha.
The halacha is passed on like Rabbi Yehuda, yeah.
Okay.